This is where they are building the largest nuclear fusion reactor in the world.
Yeah, a friend of mine told me I had to check out this pool.
America on Main Street and at the dinner table is talking about infrastructure when 20 years ago, they didn't even know what that meant.
Today, those towers are an astounding display of wealth, prestige, and engineering firsts.
It's impacting everyday Americans.
I am against the train. The way it's being done right now.
New York City housing is a scam. It is a scam, 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 scam.
The Shard in central London is being officially opened today, and at 310 metres tall, it's Europe's newest and tallest skyscraper.
Hello, I'm Fred Mills.
And this is the world's best construction podcast
by the B1M.
Hello, you're listening to your latest episode of the World's Best Construction Podcast. Today's episode is sponsored by James Hardy. I'm your host, Fred, and as always, I'm joined by Luke and Liam. Let's head down under to Liam, first of all. How are you doing, mate?
Doing great, mate. Doing very well. I'm actually packing my things up and flying over to New Zealand after we record this. Heading over to one of my good friend's weddings.
Oh, exciting.
You know, that's nice. You know Dave. You know, Big Dave.
I do know Dave. Big Dave. Yeah. Are you all right?
Yeah, he's married. Good. He's good, mate. Yeah, getting married. He's excited, I suppose. You know how
I
it
like
is.
Him better than Nick Faulkner, who, when I came to Australia, could not be bothered to drive 5 minutes from Melbourne to Sydney to meet me, despite being a big fan. 10,000 miles I flew.
I hear. Dave wouldn't do that. David's
no.
Mate.
Mm.
Like why is Dave called Big Dave?
He's a big bloke.
Is he?
This is a great story.
As in,
he's big guy. Yeah. I don't know. We just call him Big Dave at high school.
All right.
Just,
brilliant.
It's just catch. You know, it's been 20 years later and it's still Big Dave.
Big Dave.
Yep.
That's brilliant. Yeah. That is brilliant.
Oh. How are things going over in London, Mr. Mills?
Yeah, good. It's just made me think of my mate at uni called Matt Partridge. Hello, Matt, if you're listening. But we called him Alan. And he, I think for 20 years, has just been known as Alan, even though his name's actually Matt Partridge. We just called him Alan Partridge because it was...
Felt like
a good band. Saying it right now, I feel bad. It sounds, just literally hearing myself say it right now, I feel like I might have bullied him. But Matt, if you're listening.
I think everyone's got a mate like that. I've got an English friend in Melbourne and he was introduced to me as Jeff. And I found out, I've known him for about 8 years, and I found out the other day, just for my wedding, his name is Matt. His name's Matt Essex, not Jeff Essex.
That's brilliant. That is brilliant. I've got a friend called Billy, and we call him Tim, because we were like, he don't look like a Billy, he looks like a Tim, when we first met him. And he just said, you can call me whatever you want. And we were like, all right, we'll call you Tim. And so 10 years later... That's what we call him.
Apparently, according to last week's episode, I look like a Gary.
Yeah.
Yeah, a little bit.
You do, mate.
Oh, Gazza. Gazza Mills.
No, not a Gazza, a Gary.
Gary Mills.
Yeah, for real. Yeah. For real.
Anyway, we've got a very good episode coming up for you today, guys. We're talking about London's $5 billion new super tunnel. Also in the news, we're going to be covering a new baseball stadium in Las Vegas, which looks absolutely incredible, and London's Waterloo Station revamp plans. Whole thing, as ever, is going to be sprinkled with plenty of your messages and comments from the week. Let's do it. Let's dive in. Let's go. So, first this week, we are talking about London's $5 billion super tunnel. Now, interesting facts and slightly disgusting facts. Every year, 40 million tons of raw sewage is dumped into the River Thames. That is enough to fill Wembley Stadium 40 times over. Now, if you're not familiar with Wembley Stadium, if you're listening from abroad, this is a big old stadium in London, 90,000 seats. It's a big venue, and to fill that 40 times with sewage is pretty disgusting. Now, the reason for this is because London's existing plumbing dates way back to the Victorian era, when engineer Joseph Bazalgette, who is a right legend, you know, very good engineer, basically designed London's sewer system, also had a cracking moustache, you'll see in the video. He was commissioned to create the city's first comprehensive sewer system. When it opened in 1865, Bazalgette sewer was a triumph for engineering, right? This was a huge, huge deal. But the population of the city it was built to serve has almost tripled since then. So when the sewer first opened, it was designed for a city of 4 million people. London then had 4 million people. Now the city has more than 9 million people, so the system is seriously creaking. Basically, to try and solve this problem, back in 2016, the UK started work on the Thames Tideway Tunnel, which I have to say, in terms of infrastructure naming, is one of the better ones we've had in this podcast in recent months. The old TTT, not too bad. And the idea of this massive new tunnel is it's $5 billion, as you might have guessed, 25 kilometres long. It runs right under the heart of the city. Currently, if it rains in London, or if there's a kind of like surge in the sewer system, the overflow pipes funnel excess water from the sewage system out into the river. The new super sewer, this Thames Tideway Tunnel, works by intercepting that waste and dropping it down a deep shaft into a new tunnel where it floats away downriver out of London for processing in Beckton. Which is, yeah, interesting stuff.
That's what you want. That's what you want from this. I liked that you filmed this in the Docklands, mate. I think you're always at your happiest when you're in that part of London.
It was last week I filmed in the Docklands. That was Silvertown Tunnel. This week I filmed in Blackfriars.
Ah, right. Okay. Brilliant.
But on a grey day, it does look the same. You're kind of forgiven.
It does. The Thames, the footage in the video, the Thames looks extra brown as well. It does. It's very fitting to the theme of the video.
What's interesting about this is actually not dissimilar to the system we discussed about the Paris route cleaning the River Seine system that we discussed on the podcast last week. Very similar thing, where basically they're intercepting the overflow from the sewage network, catching it, funneling it away out of the river downstream to Bexon, where it's then being cleaned and reintroduced into the river. So this is one of those projects, right? You can't really see it. You don't really know about it. You've seen some of the sites along the Thames, and when you see the site in this video, you'll recognise, you know, the hoarding and the branding of some of the sites that have popped up along the Thames route. But largely, it's out of sight, out of mind, but it's going to make a huge difference to water quality, the environment, and basically the quality of life in the city. So it's a cool project. Also, Beckton, I've always heard of Beckton. Never been there. I've always heard of it on the tube lines, because I think it's the end of the DLR, isn't it, Beckton?
Yeah, that's it. Yeah.
There you go.
I think it is. Is it near Charlton or like London City Airport? Somewhere like that, who knows?
Yeah, I never knew what was in Beckton, but now I know there's a big sewer treatment plant works. So apologies for you in Beckton.
We have
a bad sense of smell. But
at the Git Construction Talking thing we did in central London a few months ago, you could see these sites on the Thames, couldn't you, from the terrace. And I remember us talking about that then, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. It's an interesting project. It's a very influential project, I've said. And I think I love infrastructure stories like this because it's making a big difference, but you don't really know about it. You don't really recognize it. And you could easily take it for granted once it's built. The feat of engineering that's gone into making this thing happen, right? This is a 25 kilometer long, 7 meter wide super tunnel running under one of the most congested cities in the world, right? For the tunnel to work, it had to stay basically as close to Bazalgette's original system as possible, and it runs along the side of the Thames for most of the route. It also needs to consistently fall by about 40 metres over its length, and that is so there's enough gravity in the system so that waste flows the right way, if you know what I mean. This is a bit of a disgusting thing to talk about, but there's an angle of incline to make sure that the stuff down there flows away naturally to where it's got to go, all the way down to Beckton. The problem is that, as you know, the ground underneath London is extremely congested, probably more congested than it is on the surface. And because the tunnel follows the Thames so closely, the team had to basically really work out what was going on, because there's a lot of infrastructure that runs along the side of the Thames and that intersects the path of this new Thames Tideway Tunnel. So they undertook these huge surveys of the river before work could start. They measured ground conditions. They did a special survey to look for unexploded bombs in the riverbed. They analysed where the mail rail lines are, the underground lines, tube lines, service lines. There's just a huge amount of stuff. And it really is like the root of this tunnel really is threading the needle of the route through all these other infrastructure that's down there. It's crazy.
I'm just going to throw this out there because I think most people would understand the reference about the bombs, but I think a lot of people listening might have no idea about why you just mentioned bombs.
Yeah,
in a
that's
river.
A good shout, Luke. Yeah. A good shout. So around 60 unexploded bombs are found in Britain every year. This is from Second World War, First World War. So because London was the center of the Blitz, it's where a lot of the energy of the Blitz was concentrated, the risk of finding unexploded ordnance in London, and particularly in the river, is pretty high. So they had to do a special survey to make sure they weren't going to bump into anything they didn't want to, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. It's really interesting. With when they're basically building these things and you've got like the postal tunnels, tube rails, all these types of things, how close can they get to these? You know, say if you're building the sewer line, right, and you've got a tube line running next to it, how close can you build the tunnels?
So in this instance, they were getting pretty close in places. I think the closest they got was about 5 meters away from one of the tube lines, which is pretty incredible. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think I can't remember where this is, but there's a pool somewhere. I think it's a hotel pool somewhere that's like in the basement. I think it might be over in Soho, West London, that kind of way. But it's something like 2 meters between the bottom of that pool and the top of the Northern Line tunnel.
What?
And the rumor is when a train goes through, you can, the pool sort of vibrates a little bit.
Wow.
So, yeah.
That's incredible. When we look at, especially like when we added them in this week's videos, you've got, images and pictures, sketches, I suppose, of the different layers. I always find that so fascinating. Just how much stuff, like you're saying, how congested it is. It's like its own little city underneath the city of infrastructure and tunnels and things like that. It's really cool.
That's just the stuff we know about. Like what don't we know about down there, you know?
Mm.
I was going to say, like, this area has been inhabited since the Romans, and that there's so much. And even talking about, like, the Victorians, like, how visionary they were to build this stuff, how amazing that we're still using this stuff. I don't know. Part of me feels like, although these projects are always really impressive, man, it's good that we're doing something like this. Like, the Victorians, mate, like, they had such a vision for the future. I feel like we don't necessarily build like that anymore, especially when it comes to rail.
No, I agree. And what was really interesting, so we went down to one of the Thames Tideway sites to film this down at Blackfriars, and they're building a much bigger kind of outcrop there. So they're building outside the Victoria embankment, and they're going to create a new public space, which is really impressive. That's all above ground, obviously, covering the below ground stuff. What was really impressive is talking to the guys there, they were saying, you know, the quality of the work that was put into that Victorian sewer is amazing. The brickwork they're uncovering, the stuff they're analysing and surveying is in fantastic condition. It's just overwhelmed. You know, it was just built for a city that's literally a third of the size of what it is now.
Yeah.
So for them to, you know, try and interact with that, it was impressive. It was impressive for them to say that the system is still working. It's still working as planned. It's still good quality. It's still functioning. It's worked for the city for, you know, hundreds of years. And this isn't replacing that system. This is just giving it an overflow. Basically, it's helping the system cope by giving it an overflow outlet. So, it is incredible stuff. And I think that's the story of many major cities around the world. But some of this infrastructure that's really stood the test of time and keeps these places moving is incredible.
Yeah, that actually reminds me of something I saw the other day about, I think it was in Italy, about the ancient Roman pipes funneling water into the cities. And they still use them today. I believe it was Italy. It might have been somewhere else. I'll find the link and share it with you guys. But I just found that so interesting that you've got this architecture for like key, you know, water pipes and things like that, and they still use it in some towns to get water to the township.
That is wild. That's wild. That's unbelievable. I mean, I suppose we still use Roman roads to an extent. I know we've built on top of them for cars and stuff, but there's still so much from the Romans like left behind. That's why all our skyscrapers in the city of London look weird, because they're on a Roman road layout, aren't they? They're dealing with all these small little crevices for...
Are you trying to blame the Romans for walkie-talkie being the shape it is?
No.
I think that's pretty...
I'm thanking the Romans, mate. I'm thanking the Romans. I still stand by the City of London skyline. I think at least it's not boring. At least it's not a copy and paste like skyline from any other generic international city.
No.
No.
I had a PR person who shall remain nameless reach out to me and say, "Oh, Fred, we'd love to invite you along to this big like PR reception at 8 Bishopsgate. You can see the building, and we'd love for you to do like a bit of a write up on how great the building is." I was like, "Yeah, I've absolutely rinsed it on my podcast, so probably not for me."
Yeah, but we could have gone and had a laugh with it at least, you know.
Yeah, that's just what they want. Just the kind of positive PR they want.
Well.
Yeah, I found what I was talking about. It was the Roman aqueduct that's still functioning and bringing water to some of Rome's fountains. So it still brings water to the Trevi Fountain.
Wow.
Unbelievable.
That's incredible. Unbelievable. So incredible. That's what you say, like the craftsmanship of the Victorians and things like that. It was just obviously built to last back then, wasn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, talking of stuff that's built to last, what I didn't realise is the Victoria Embankment, which runs for about 2 kilometres on the north side of the Thames. It goes from, I don't know the exact area, I think it goes from where Parliament is, about 2 kilometres round towards the city that way.
Mm-hmm.
That was built to house the Bazalgette sewer system. So before this sewer was built in the 1800s, that would have just been the muddy banks of the Thames. But they basically built that embankment area, that public space, to house the sewer system. And now within there, you've got the Circle and District underground lines. And shockingly, there are 10 tube lines intersect the path of the Thames Tideway Tunnel as it crosses underneath the Thames. Like, this is the complexity, the threading the needle that's gone on here is incredible. And again, this is one of those sites that's underground, out of sight. You can't see it. All you see is the little access points. They use 6 different TBMs because of the mix of chalk and clay under London to build this thing. Like, it's an incredible feat of engineering. And I think what's quite nice is that, certainly when I met the team down at Blackfriars, you can see in the video, we met one of the directors there, we talk about the project. They really feel the responsibility of Bazalgette's legacy and making, they're creating public space in London, much like he did with Victoria Embankment. At Blackfriars, they're creating this new outcrop where part of the sewer system and one of the interceptors will sit. But they've capped all that with this new public space. There's going to be art displays there. There's going to be spaces for watching concerts and stuff. I have to say, standing there filming, it would be a great spot for New Year's Eve because you can stand there and see St. Paul's, the Shard, Big Ben, the London Eye, all from one position, which is pretty cool. So,
really
nice
team
doing a really nice job. And the respect they have for the Bazalgette and his work in engineering was really came through. So it was impressive.
Yeah, the public realm stuff, that's really impressive, and carrying on the legacy of what the original system did with that embankment. I didn't know that, mate. That's mad. Once again, the vision. And it wasn't just for the sake of it. Like that part, that embankment is beautiful.
Yeah,
it's so beautiful, and it goes to show that when you do infrastructure, it doesn't have to just be ugly. Like, it can be stunning. Hopefully they don't, with this new public realm stuff, hopefully it's not ugly. Please don't make it ugly. Like, we got renders of what they're going
to
do?
There are renders. It is more modern than the Victorian embankment, but it's certainly respectfully done. We'll have to reserve judgment on that and see what happens. But
you don't seem sure, mate.
I'm not sure because the Victorian Embankment is a very high bar. It really is it's infrastructure shaping a city quite literally, because you've got that beautiful lamp lined promenade on the side. You've got the trees.
Yeah.
There's the detailing on the brickwork. Stonework. It really is an impressive thing. So it's a hard one to meet, but they've done a good job, I think. Finished building the tunnels in 2022. They're now doing a lot of above ground finishing completion. They're going to be testing the tunnel before it then gets fully commissioned and goes into use later this year. I don't know how you test a sewer this big, quite frankly. It's 25 kilometers long, 7 meters wide.
I think I know how, mate.
I wasn't going to speculate, Luke, but
I'm not going to be crude. We're better than that.
Hold yourself back. Yes, but hopefully next time it rains in London, when this sewer system is working, it will intercept some of that overflow, and then in time, the river will start to become cleaner. As we said last week, when the Seine runs clean in Paris, who knows what you'll see at the bottom of it. When the River Thames runs clean in London, what will you find down there? Who knows? All sorts of stuff.
Yeah. Well, it's always going to look brown because it's got a clay bed, isn't it? So that's always a misconception about the Thames. Oh, it looks brown. Oh, it's so dirty. Well, yes, it's a little bit dirty, but it's always going to look like that, lads. All right, calm down.
Don't tell them that, Lou. They just spent $5 billion trying to make it run clear.
Well,
and look nice.
Would you have a swim in this? Let's do what we did in the...
No.
Me neither.
No way, man.
But what you said yesterday about Paris, you'd be like, yeah, I'd go in my skivvies and have a little dip in Paris, but you wouldn't in the Thames after the super sewer's been built.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's out of order.
Mate, have you seen the tide? The current? Like when the tide's coming in and out? The current?
It's strong.
Mate, I used to live in Bermondsey. I walk over Tower Bridge all the time. Mate, the current is savage.
That is true. That is true.
It's mostly mate, fancy my swimming cold. Skills. It looks really cold.
Oh, mate, yeah. It does. It looks nasty. Put it that way.
That should have been one of my questions to the CEO when I met him. I think he was the chief technology officer or something. I should have said, come on then, swimming in it? And he'd be like, yeah. That's a YouTube video.
Yeah, that's the true test, mate. That's the true test for any of this.
To swim in the Thames Tideway Tunnel. Oh,
yeah. Oh, so much river-related content lately, Fred. What's going down?
So much sewage-related content lately. I'm sorry for this, guys. It's just kind of the way the chips have fallen. But look, it's not the most glamorous project. It's not a very nice thing to talk about or even think about. But it's a really good example of infrastructure, I think, shaping our world. If we didn't have this...
Mm.
You would know about it. If we didn't have Bazalgette's Victorian era sewer system in London, you'd definitely know about it. So it's one of those things that good infrastructure, you shouldn't notice. You know, you should just take for granted. And this for me is another one of those. So fingers crossed it doesn't double in budget or extend in timeline or get blocked on the first flush. Sort of thing the UK might be known for. But anyway, it, so far, looks like a very good success story for the construction industry. So, yeah, for me, a real project that speaks to the best of this sector, provided it works. Let us know what you think about the Thames Tideway Tunnel, guys. Are you excited for the Thames Tideway Tunnel? Are you excited to see the water run clear and to see sewage diverted at last? Get your comments coming in, podcast@theb1m.com. So today's episode is sponsored by James Hardy. James Hardy recently featured on a modular construction project in Poole down in Dorset, UK. The planning approval was originally for render, but due to time and budget restrictions, a similar look was needed. James Hardy were able to offer an affordable A2 fire rated solution with the Hardy architectural panel in smooth sand. They didn't go for the brushed concrete, guys. They went for smooth sand. Very exciting.
That's a good option.
It is, with the right option here, it seems. A blend of three colours was chosen from the core range, which included Arctic White, Anthracite Grey and Cobblestone to give the coastal location a modern and contemporary look. Does that scream coastal to you guys?
Definitely, yeah.
Nice.
Very neutral, relaxing colours, isn't it?
It is. I'm getting this is a nice looking project. I'm getting the vibe and all brought to life with the Hardy architectural panel. Guys, James Hardy's products are specially formulated to give you a long-lasting, low-maintenance and consistent finish for years to come. And all James Hardy facade products are backed by an industry-leading 15-year warranty. You can find out more down at the link in the podcast description. Guys, do go and check out James Hardy. Great company, great people, great products. And making a real difference to some awesome construction projects. So, yeah, massive thanks to James Hardy for sponsoring today's episode. Also in the news this week, we are swinging over to Las Vegas, Nevada, where a 33,000-seat new baseball stadium has been unveiled. I really like this. This is designed by Bjarke Ingels Group and HNTB, who are structural engineers. Really impressive-looking building. It's got a shimmering metal-clad roof. It's going to become the home of the Athletics, which are currently the Oakland Athletics, which are a baseball team about to relocate from Oakland to Las Vegas when this stadium is completed in a few seasons' time. As you might have guessed, we're at the limits of my baseball team knowledge and phrasing, but I think they have seasons. I think they can change city names. They're called the Oakland Athletics. They look like quite a big deal. New stadium for them. Bjarke Ingels designed. The big fat thing I want to talk about this is it looks rather like a certain building down in Sydney, Australia. You guys getting that vibe?
Yeah. Mm. Looks exactly the same. It's this thing when they drew this up, were they not? Do you think they realize or that obviously have an indication, but do you think they would think there's going to be like any kind of negative press? I say negative press, negative comments online about it, because there's a lot of people in our comment section being, you know, stating the facts that this looks exactly like the Opera House.
I mean, it looks almost exactly like Sydney Opera House from certain angles. I should say, in a statement from big founder and creative director Bjarke Ingels, he says he talks about sort of the positioning of it, the site constraints, and he says the resultant architecture is like a spherical armadillo shaped by the local climate while opening and inviting the life of the strip to enter and explore.
No. No. That is a load of cobblers, mate.
Well, a lot of that statement is, sorry, Bjarke, if you're listening, but a lot of it is highbrow architectural nonsense that doesn't make a lot of sense.
It's not even, I'd hasten to add that it's not even that. It's just corporate jargon, mate. You know, it's just trying to avoid responsibility, I think. It's so painfully obvious. I think you'd get away with it like more if you said, one of our inspirations was the Sydney Opera House. Like, just be honest, because that's clearly what this looks like.
I have to say, it's impressive to see something as big as a baseball field fully enclosed like this in a structure this large, airy and open.
Yeah.
On the Vegas Strip. I think that's pretty impressively done. Taking aside the Sydney Opera House stuff, I think it does look like a pretty impressive venue.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a fantastic project. It looks really cool, especially from the inside, which is the important thing, isn't it? Really, that is the important thing. They're like the user experience. Really cool. And you can see the New York hotel in the background. I've been on that roller coaster. Have you been on that?
No.
After one or two bevvies, mate, my word, that roller coaster that goes around that hotel, I think that's the best roller coaster I've been on in my life.
Isn't there one on the stratosphere as well, where you can like, it leans you out the side of the building or something, it dangles you over the edge of the building?
Yeah, I think you can like bungee jump from it or something. Oof. Like it, I was like, that's too much. That's Vegas, weird city. Really weird city, but a lot of teams are moving there. There was an NFL team that moved there, right? The Raiders, I think they did. Because like what you said, there's
Allegiant Stadium. Teams out
there, that's it. The teams out there are franchises, so they can move city, which I find really odd. Look, the design, the inside's cool. I just paint it a different color or something. Just make it less.
Well, I guess in the desert, you want to be, I'm saying this, in the desert, you want to be, you know, white reflective to keep it cool. They haven't done that with the Allegiant Stadium. They've gone for black glass.
That's it. Yeah,
with a bit of PV. For balance, and so people actually get the full understanding of this design, and in fairness to Bjarke Ingels, I'm going to read his full comment right. So this is a statement from big founder and creative director Bjarke Ingels. He said, "Our design for the new Vegas home for the A's, which is the Athletics, is conceived in response to the unique culture and climate of the city. Five pennant arches enclose the ballpark, shading the Nevada sun while opening to the soft daylight from the north. A giant window frames a majestic view of the life of the Strip and the iconic New York Hotel skyline. All direct sunlight is blocked, while the soft sunlight is allowed to wash the field in natural light. The resultant architecture is a spherical armadillo shaped by local climate while opening and inviting the life of the Strip to enter and explore. In the City of Spectacle, the A's new armadillo is designed for passive shading and natural light, the architectural response to the Nevada climate generating a new kind of vernacular icon in Vegas.
Yeah.
Quite a bit of spin happening in there, isn't there? I mean, iconic view of the New York Hotel.
Well, you can do everything you just said, like with the light and, you know, the direction the field's facing, and still have a revised design. You know, it doesn't need to look like so much like the Sydney Opera House.
I mean, the comment section is heavily lots of people posting GIFs of the Sydney Opera House and asking, "What's this designed by an architect from Sydney?" Taking that out. Some other people saying, so Gregory saying this would have been lovely if it had been built in Oakland. People saying it's beautiful, nice looking. It could be surrounded. Cooper is saying it could be surrounded by an ocean of parking. Classic America. Build a nice stadium and then put an enormous car park around it because there's no public transit system. Yeah.
Yeah.
Could well happen.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Impressive. I like it, apart from the whole Sydney thing. But yeah, I think taking away the terrible spin and PR around it and the fact that it looks like Sydney Opera House, the design's actually pretty cool. It's going to be a pretty good add to the Las Vegas Strip, I think.
Yeah, I agree. Spot on, mate.
Did you go and watch a baseball game there, Liam? You and I went to a baseball game in San Diego, didn't we?
Did you, mate?
We did.
Big night out, yeah.
Yep. Good company. Not the biggest fan of baseball, mate. I don't think we were there for like 3 hours. I think they hit the ball once. One thing I did love, though, is the stadium was in the city. It's basically in the town. It was like our hotel was next to it.
Yeah.
That's great. That was amazing. You can see the skyscrapers, skyline behind you, sun setting. That was beautiful.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah. I saw a game in Chicago, which was much better. It was raining. It was the opposite to what San Diego was. San Diego was beautiful, evening sunshine. It was warm. It was great. The game I saw in Chicago was raining, but they had much more energy, much more exciting. It was the Chicago Cubs. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. They're a bigger team, aren't they? I think maybe. I don't know. I'm not going to pretend I know.
We've reached the limits of my baseball knowledge.
I saw the Nationals last year. The Washington Nationals. That was decent enough.
Nice.
Yeah. I was like, this is all right. It's not football.
I enjoy the atmosphere more. You know, it's the night out, it's the foods, the national anthem being sung, you know.
Yeah.
All that sort of stuff.
It's more family friendly as well. Like you can take like all your kids, like you could take your nan if you wanted, and you know you're gonna all have a good time and a bit of entertainment. Like, I like that about American sports. Yeah, you don't really get that in football, do you? It's a bit more yobbish.
Well, indeed, yeah. Swinging back from the USA, back to London, UK, going back to London in this episode, London's Waterloo Station is set for an overhaul. This is pretty exciting stuff, right? So Network Rail and Lambeth Council unveiled the new Grimshaw Architects-led master plan earlier this week. The plans include an overhauled northern and southern concourse, more than 40 enhanced walking routes and cycling routes, and hundreds of new trees planted across 1,900 square metres of new green space around the station. There's also a very nice looking undercroft space, similar, almost identical to the one that's been constructed under London Bridge, which I think was also Grimshaw Architects. So, I like this. It's well overdue. Waterloo does need an update and a bit of reconfiguring. They seem to always be working on it. It's my local station, London. It's the one I come in and out of most. They've always been doing work on it in recent years and decades, but it feels like it does need a bit of a bigger update and overhaul. Yeah. I'm not quite sure this is going to do that, but it's very welcomed, and I like it.
Mm. Why don't you think it's going to do that?
I don't think it's enough, basically.
What would you like to see, Fred?
I think it's a good question. I think I think the whole area is crying out for greater vertical development, right? So I think they could sell the airspace above Waterloo Station, put some skyscrapers and higher rises above it, like they've done with other stations, London Bridge, for example, and then use that money to go bigger on the station reconfiguration underneath. The area around it is quite a transient part of London when you're immediately around the station, and it just feels a bit congested and dirty. And I think the stuff they're doing here around a new public park, green space, is good. But they're sort of tinkering a little bit. And what certainly appears from these renders that they're just tinkering a bit. And I think I would like to see it go bigger and bolder. I mean, it almost needs a complete rebuild, Waterloo. Maybe that's a bit dramatic, but...
No.
Wow. Nah. Yeah. I think sometimes subtle's the way to go. I think this is just a nice subtle... Like you said, at the moment, Waterloo is dirty. When you go outside, it stinks. It's dirty. Streets are grubby. I think opening it up like this and just making it more of an open space, because a lot of people, like you said, it's transient, right? And if you're waiting for a train, you want somewhere nice to chill. Like, you're outside, you want a bit of an open space. You can, sit on the chairs and wait for your train to come, right? I feel like this is kind of hitting the nail on the head. I don't know if you need more skyscrapers as well, especially on top of tube stations in London. I think it kind of takes away of that like Victorian architecture of the station itself.
Yeah, I think you could keep the facade again, like they did with London Bridge and other places. I think keeping the historic exterior is definitely doable, but then do a bigger oversail development above it. I think just if you look at a map of London, look at a satellite view of London, Waterloo Station takes up a huge horizontal space. And if we could improve density by putting, high rises on top of it, whether that's housing, skyscrapers, offices, whatever it may be, there's an opportunity there to improve the density of the area. And I don't know, people were saying it in the comments, it's a bit of the area is quite run down at the minute around the station. It just feels quite transient. So this update is welcomed. I feel Waterloo needs a bigger overhaul, personally.
Yeah. London's very own Hudson Yards, mate. I think I could see it happening. But I think this is actually a really good proposal. I love the public realm. I like that second slide. By the way, if you're listening, you're like, what are they talking about? The links to all of these Instagram posts are in the podcast description, so please have a look. But that second post with the tunnel, the archways, mate, that looks amazing. I love it. And it's so London. So London.
Yeah.
Big shout out to our office, which you can see just wedged behind a building in the first slide to the left of that wall. Did you see that? There we go.
That is B1M Global HQ. One of the better looking, one of the kinder renders of that building, I'd say, because it's not the best looking building. Yeah. But hey, when you're in it, you can't see it. So.
True.
Lots of nice just to be clear, I very much welcome this as a regular user of Waterloo. It's the station I use most. I really do welcome this. I just wonder if it's going to be enough to really sort this place out. Interestingly, Waterloo is the UK's third busiest transport hub. That includes everything. That's airports, the works. The station had 57.8 million entries and exits in 2023. Busiest station in London. Yeah, huge. Huge. So it's right to be properly invested in. If you look at the great job they've done on London Bridge, I think doing that here and in time, Victoria, goodness me, Victoria needs a similar sort of level of attention.
Yeah.
We'd much appreciate. Yeah. Lots of good comments. Jared saying, very overdue. Matthew Shirker saying, yes, it's beautiful. Let's have some more of this. Beautiful concepts. Another chap here, Yavi, saying, amazing. The current status of the station area is just terrible. Some people poking fun at the UK's rail infrastructure building projects, saying it might not be completed until 2043, maybe cancelled before then. For balance, we've got Joe saying London gets more, but the government can't even get HS2 to the north. We understand that, mate. We understand what you mean. Just in the last week, we've covered the Thames Tideway Tunnel, the Silvertown Tunnel, a rebuilding of Waterloo, all of that money being invested in London. fair enough, the UK's biggest city and economic area, but if we want to grow the UK economy, we need to invest in all areas, including the north. Lots of comments on that theme, it has to be said. I like this. I just not sure it's going to be enough. We will have to wait and see what happens and what unfolds.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it though, mate. Looking forward to seeing what happens.
Let us know what you think, guys. If you're a regular user of Waterloo Station, or if you love your baseball and can't wait for it to come to Las Vegas, let us know what you think about this week's news stories. Get your comments coming in, podcast@theb1m.com. Swing on over to the inbox. What have you got for us this week, Luke?
Right, so we're playing a little bit of catch-up on an email, but it's a really good email. This is from Christian Martin, who says, "Hi guys, I have a question for you. Could you give us a bit of an overview as to why construction, primarily in the UK, costs as much as it does? For example, my local city, Birmingham, is planning to spend over £1 billion to create an expanded tram network, particularly painful because they tore up the existing tram network in the 50s. The Liverpool Street Station development is estimated to cost £1.5 billion. My days. And even a roundabout in Basingstoke cost £20 million. He goes on to say, like, what are the reasons, and suggest maybe a few reasons, but I'm not going to lead you, Fred. So what do you think, mate, about a cost of like,
it's a good question, and there's a lot of nuance depending on each individual project. So obviously I can't comment on the project he's named, but I think talking more generally, if you look at the UK, some of Europe, probably less so Europe, but some of the US, there's a lot of money goes into a lot of the fees, the consultancy around these projects. There's a lot of money gets paid out for designing, environmental reviews, environmental studies, you know, soil investigations. There's a lot that we put into our projects that maybe don't get put in other markets. It's partly that, it's also partly that costs here are more expensive than they are in other markets for a whole host of reasons, which is, you know, a broader economic discussion. But yeah, it's there's a lot that goes into these products. There's a lot of red tape and requirements, which, you know, red tape isn't necessarily a bad thing. There are good things around sustainability, environmental impacts, economic impacts, investing in local communities, planning approvals, you know, all stuff that's there for a reason, but altogether makes quite a complex, expensive process for a lot of UK construction projects. Take that to the extreme. I think HS2 is probably one of the biggest extremes, like the amount of money spent on different things within that, you know, archaeological investigations, route planning, route adjustment, soil investigations. I think they spent £6 million on a beaver training school at one point. Like,
on a what?
A beaver training school. So they I think they were having to relocate some beavers as part of the route, and they spent £6 million rehabilitating these beavers somewhere else. I mean, that's just like, that's just an example of how, yeah, yeah, how costs can rack up in these projects.
So Chris sends, good answer, by the way. He says, as the public, we're expected to just accept these figures whenever local or national construction project is announced. I think that's true, isn't it? Like, we have no idea. And there are a lot of people making a lot of money from this kind of stuff, right? Like, that, there's no doubt that it could be cheaper, probably.
Yeah, and like you say, we have to accept these figures, but and you're right to a point, you know, when a national government or a local government decides to do something, there is, to a point, little you can do about it. But there is a planning process for all these projects. There is public consultation where people can vocally, you know, make their points heard. There's also elections. Yeah, we elect our local councils, we elect our national government, and if you don't like what's happening, if you don't like money being mismanaged or misspent, you can make that clear at the ballot box. Now, I recognise that's not, doesn't feel that direct, and sometimes it can feel, you know, like your voice might not be heard, but at the end of the day, that is how a lot of these things are held to account, is through, you know, we talked a bit before about the problem of tying politics to infrastructure, but misspending and mismanagement of public funds is a political issue.
Yeah. Yeah. Fair play, mate. Very good answer. Maybe you should be a politician, Fred. That was masterful, mate.
My first act as Prime Minister would be... Oh, there's a few things I'd do, actually.
HS2?
No. No, no. No. No, it's simpler than that. Like the abolition of nightclub bouncers would be the first one. Banning ABBA on the radio, number two.
What?
Yeah.
What?
Big first day, mate. Lots planned.
Love it, mate. Oh, love it. What a week. Brilliant episode.
Banning of marzipan.
Yeah. Oh, here we go.
Extradition of Richard Madeley.
Great choice, mate.
I'd agree
with that. I would say ban the improper use of the pronunciation of yogurt.
There you go. One for Liam, Deputy PM. Mm-hmm. Liam Marsh coming in.
You just said yogurt.
Yeah, you can't say yogurt. It's yogurt.
No.
You're going to be my chancellor, Luke, because you keep banging on about Amex points. So there you go. Just buy a new high-speed railway on Amex for us. That'd be great.
The points would pay for all
also,
of our
my
FN.
Second day, a bill going through Parliament to stop people putting mushrooms in lasagna. There you go. I think these are popular policies agreed. That be adopted across the board.
Yeah, I would say architects can no longer put flying cars in renders or drones.
There you go.
Oh,
it's a busy. The first King's Speech is going to be a busy one, isn't it? He's going to be reading out all these different proposals, ideas. Hospital car parking charges for staff. Well, no, hospital car parking charges altogether, right? You shouldn't pay for parking at hospital, especially if one of your relatives is really unwell. And we shouldn't expect our NHS staff to pay for parking. How I make up that shortfall in the budget, I don't know. I'll just grow the economy. Do a Liz Truss.
Do it. Brilliant. Very good, Fred. Very topical.
I feel I should stop here.
Yeah, stop it. Stop it.
Also, I just want to give a quick shout out to John Ayres, who wrote in last week. And after the episode went out, he actually apologised to me on Instagram. He said, Fred, I'd like to apologise. I didn't mean to call you Ben. I had a long day at work and it was late. So, John, I'm sorry, mate. You're totally forgiven. We were just having some fun and winding you up.
Poor old John.
Yeah, we love John. Good message. Write in again, John. We appreciate it.
Yeah, write in again, mate. Write in again.
Also, that Bob the Builder thing is real. We talked about it last week. Yeah. But it's happening. It is a Puerto Rican-based Bob the Builder movie coming soon.
Skeptical about that.
Yep.
Unless it's a Gary from Dagenham voicing Bob, I don't think I'm not in. I'm not solved.
Don't you worry, guys. We're going to give you the full movie review on that when it comes out.
I think we
when
should.
When it's put together.
I think we actually should, mate. I think we should actually do that. Go to the Odeon in Leicester Square. Mate, come on.
Did you see Oppenheimer won the Oscars? Just like swept the board of the Oscars.
I'm not surprised, though.
Maybe the critics watching it just got like 2 hours in and were like, oh, just let it win, just so we can leave the room and just get on with our lives. Movie just going on and on and on.
The Fred Mills review.
Well, thanks for listening, guys. We really enjoyed chatting to you this week. Massive thanks to James Hardy for sponsoring today's episode. We really, really appreciate that. Don't forget, you can learn more about James Hardy at the link down there in the podcast description. Also, go and leave us a review. If you're on Apple or Spotify and you've just spent the best part of an hour enjoying our voices in your car or in your ears or wherever it may be, whatever you're doing, going for a run, going for a walk, please pay us back by going over to podcasts. Going over to Apple, Spotify, Amazon, wherever you get your podcast, clicking 5 stars, leaving a nice review. We'd really appreciate it. Thanks for tuning in, and we'll speak to you again next week.
That was good. Good London chat, isn't it? Makes me miss London when I chat about it, when we're talking about it.
Does it, mate? Well,
He doesn't mean that.
No, he does. I can tell.
I don't miss this time of year. Not this time of year.
Yep.
Yeah.
It's good, mate.
It is good.
I get my fish delivered to my door. I go to Europe on the weekends.
What?
I miss seafood. Get my seafood delivered to my door.